proceed, please.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Richard Ojibovic. I am counsel for the appellants in this case. Quite simply, as your honors are aware, this involves a denial of a Rule 60B motion filed in the district court. What makes this a little bit unusual about the way it comes to you is that in the beginning of this case, my clients file a counterclaim. There's a motion to dismiss filed, and three of the four counts of the counterclaim are dismissed. And the court then initially says, you have to answer the fourth count of the counterclaim. We're going to leave that pending. The court then proceeds to a hearing on the replevin issue, and in issuing its findings of fact and ruling on that says, oh, by the way, now that I've heard the replevin issue, I also don't believe you have a valid basis for count four of your counterclaim, which was a breach of warranty count. And in doing that, the court applies certain general incidents of New York law as well as a clause in the lease that says that this was an as-is transaction. So there's no dispute in this case under the lease that New York law applies. A Rule 60B motion, we understand it's a very extraordinary remedy. It's something that's not available in the state courts, but it does exist for a reason. And one of the reasons is to allow the courts to have broad power to revisit certain issues even after the fact. Now, in addition to determining whether or not this case fits within one of the enumerated reasons in Rule 60B, the other things that we're required to show, which are pointed out by my opponent, is first that it was timely filed, that there is a meritorious defense, that they are not being unfairly prejudiced, and that this fits within one of the areas of 60B. I'm going to concede one issue they raised in their motion. My brief, I believe, pleads this under 60B1 or 60B6. I don't believe it's a 60B1 issue at all, so I'm conceding that point to them. And I'm not conceding that based on the timeliness of when it was filed, because I don't believe that it was filed more than a year after the judgment became final. It was entered more than a year after the original findings of fact were entered, but at that point in time there was still issues pending between the parties, so we don't believe it was final. But I'm conceding the 60B1 point because I do not believe that the conduct we allege fits within the definition, including mistake and excusable neglect. So clearly this is a case that has to be viewed under 60B6. And in order to proceed under that, we had to file that within a reasonable time. We filed that motion, I believe, 30 days after the case was finally concluded, 1 year and 30 days from when the original findings of fact were entered after the replevin hearing.
Where do you expect all this to go? I mean, a $200,000-some deficiency after they get the buses back?
There is. Okay.
I'm just baffled at this whole transaction, frankly, buying these buses. And maybe this was before your time in the case.
It was.
Yeah. I don't see where you're going.
To answer your question directly, even if our case, you find that the Rule 60B motion should have been granted, all that would allow us to do is proceed on the remaining count of the counterclaim under the provisions of New York law, which we say should be applied to this case. So the end result might be we may not come out any better off, or we could get a hearing on our counterclaim and prevail and only partially affect the deficiency judgment.
These buses can't be worth anything.
Well, that's one of the issues we contend based on the condition at the time.
Yeah, well, okay.
All right. The other thing we have to show is that there is a meritorious defense. One of the bases of our motion is that we claim that New York DOT regulations and motor vehicle dealer and transporter regulations from the state of New York are applicable in this case, or should have been applicable in this case. There's no dispute those were not in the record at the time. We believe those regulations apply because the lease specifically says it's governed by the laws of the state of New York. Now, their response to that is a couple of things. First of all, they say we're not a dealer, which affects whether or not the one set of regulations applies. They say, we bought this lease, we bought all these leases, we're not in the business of leasing vehicles. They're the successor in interest under the lease. But clearly, when you're a successor in interest, you take it subject to any defenses that person could have raised against the original party to the lease. if that weren't the case, then in any case, I could set up a separate company and say, all right, you're leasing it from me, assign the lease, and then have that company say, well, we're not in the business of leasing buses, so none of those defenses are good against us. The other issue they raise as to whether or not these regulations would even be applicable to them is that they talk about the fact that these buses may not even have been used within the state of New York. But once again, I think that stands the choice of law clause in the lease on its ear. Some law has to apply at the time the buses were leased.
Sounds like the buses wouldn't drive long enough to get to New York.
I agree. So some law has to apply, because otherwise, once again, you could have a transaction in one state. You could say, well, the buses are in another state, and park the buses in a state where the transaction takes place, where you're not subject to certain restrictions. So we think these New York regulations would apply, which means we would have a meritorious defense. And one of the biggest issues in applying those regulations is that this lease says this was an as-is transaction. Under the either set of the regulations from New York, which we believe would apply, says you cannot have an as-is transaction. One of them says just in the purchase of a used vehicle, and one of the statutes says purchase, lease, etc. Says you cannot have it. You can't bargain away all your warranties. And that was a large issue that the judge relied upon, was that he said, this is an as-is transaction. I don't have to go any further with that. We believe under New York law that's not true. Third issue is whether or not they would be unfairly prejudiced in this case. Well, they're not being inconvenienced. They've already got the buses back. They already have the deficiency judgment. If the court were to say it was an abuse of discretion to not grant the 60B motion and send it back, as I stated earlier, all that's going to happen is we're now going to get a further hearing, but they're not going to be inconvenienced by that, possibly, but not unfairly prejudiced. So then the issue becomes, does this fit within 60B6? Now, what happens in this case is I don't think this is purely just a mistake of law. When I think of mistake of law, I think of a couple of situations. One is I had the choice between law A and law, I'm a judge, I'm a choice between law A and law B. I apply law A, somebody says you should have applied law B. Or I believe under the law you had to prove A, B, and C when it turns out under the case law you only had to prove A and B. In this situation, we didn't even have this law applicable and provided at the time. And I think if we don't go back and do something, I think this is a perfect example of a situation that does fall within 60B6. It doesn't readily fit within any of the other considerations, but I think this is something where the underlying duty and purpose under 60B is there a reason we should go back and try to make it right? And I think in this case, if we don't send it back and make that attempt, then what we are doing is we're saying we don't care if there's law that was applicable out here on this that should be applied. You're stuck with the decision that was made based on what was applied at the time. And you've got to remember, what we're saying is that the law that was applied was not only a little bit different from what we want to apply, it's the exact opposite. So we mainly due to the existence of this as-is clause in the contract. We don't think this is a case where we're just trying to take a second bite of the apple. My clients believe that they're just trying to achieve a fair and just result, and we believe it's within the court's discretion in this case to say you should have allowed the 60B motion based on what was disclosed and allowed further hearing on this, and that's what we're asking the court to do. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Dennis Dressler, and I am appearing on behalf of Equilease Financial Services, Inc., and EQ Transportation, Inc. The arguments that the opponent has just raised, as they've conceded in the briefs, were raised after the litigation occurred in this case. There was multiple opportunities for defendants to raise these issues. They could have raised them in the briefing on the motion to dismiss. They could have raised it on the briefing at the trial. They could have raised it in the briefing at the post-trial briefing. They could have raised it in connection with the hearing on the evidentiary hearing on the deficiency amount, which they did not even attend. What they did do is after everything had transpired, after judgment had been entered, they raised additional arguments that were not raised at any point in time during the trial proceedings. That fact is conceded by the opponent in his brief. There's arguments here about successor in interest. None of those issues were ever raised at the trial court level. This court has routinely said that motions to reconsider are not the appropriate place to raise arguments that should have been raised earlier, citing the Carracker and Cassis, I believe is the pronunciation, decisions. The issue before the court today is just simply, did Judge Baker commit an abuse of discretion in denying the motion to reconsider? Judge Baker found the case of Talano, which is almost factually straight on point, exact same situation where after the judgment was entered, the appellant in that case raised additional arguments. The arguments are the same that are being raised by counsel in this fact, in this case, which is there was a mistake of law, that the Judge Baker should have divined what their arguments were at the trial level and ruled in their favor accordingly. According to the Talano decision, 60B does not allow for mistake of law as one of the enumerated defenses under a 60B motion. Judge Baker, in relying on what is binding precedent to him, ruled that the motion to reconsider was denied. So the question before the court is, was that abuse of discretion? Was the court's ruling applying binding Seventh Circuit precedent to what appears to be very factually similar circumstances an abuse of discretion? Of course, our position of that there was no abuse of discretion, that that's exactly what the court should have done and in fact did do. Also raised is the issue that attorney inattentiveness in their brief. It wasn't raised on oral argument, but spend 2 seconds just addressing that. There's a decision cited, the Harrington decision, for the purpose that attorney misconduct, attorney failure to do certain things can be an excuse under 60B. However, the cite is only a partial cite. The real cite says that attorney inattentiveness to litigation is not excusable no matter the resulting consequence. That's the full cite. And I think that that cite is important in this case because they failed to bring these issues up at all the different areas that I spoke of earlier, at the motion to dismiss, at the trial court level, at the trial briefs, at the post-trial briefs, at the trial itself, and at the evidentiary hearing. None of these issues were ever brought up. In concluding, Judge Baker did exactly what he was supposed to do. He followed binding Seventh Circuit precedent, determined that the attempt to raise allegations that there was a misapplication of the law in a 60B motion was inappropriate and denied the motion. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. Do you have anything else to add? Does he have any time? 1 minute.
Thank you. I want to just address two issues raised. First was the issue about when we got to the point where there was the hearing on the deficiency judgment, that was the only issue out there left, as defined by the court at that time, was what payments were made, how much was owed. So based on the previous findings of fact, this issue couldn't have been raised at that point. It had to be raised by motion at some point in time, either earlier or subsequent to that. And the other thing is that when the motion, it was called motion for reconsideration, was filed, after all the proceedings were concluded, that was simply a case where the motion was filed, response was filed, and then it was summarily decided by the court. There was no, I don't know if it would have been an evidentiary hearing because it was a legal argument, but no argument held on it at that time, which I think the court could have done in trying to decide the merits of the 60B motion. And other than that, I'll stand by what I argued earlier. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. The court will take this case under advisement.